This is The Podcast, a weekly debate by two brothers, Texelli and Gunselli. Join the discussion on thepodcast.com. That is the words The Podcast with an E tacked at the end. Follow The Podcast on Twitter as @ThePodcast, and don't forget to add the E at the end of that. Now we join our program already in progress.
This call is now being recorded.
Hey, it's Gun from D.C. And this is Texelli once again traveling America's heartland. So, in my opinion, it's been a lighter news week. We haven't had any mass shootings, thankfully. We haven't had everybody's going back over a company price gouging on pills.
Oh, really?
What's that? What about the pills? Oh, it blew up in the last couple of days. There is a there's an HIV pill that used to cost, I think, $15 a pill. And this pharmaceutical company cranked it up to $750 a pill, and very similar arc with, and I'm, you know, I'm driving, so I'm probably getting all these numbers wrong, but the gist is, it went from fistful of dollars up to briefcase full of dollars money per pill. And so some people are going, oh, you know, so the debates are like, oh, you know, why isn't the government stepping in and all that? Well, honestly, the whole reason that these people are able to charge that much money for the pill is because it's patented, and the government did step in and, you know, allowed the patent. That's where the free market / libertarian argument would be like, hey, if you had more than one company able to make this stinking pill that's been, you know, already out for dozens of years, we'd be better off because you have actual competition.
Right. Right, yeah. But that's really messed up, too, especially if it's for HIV.
Yeah, well, there's another pill they sell that's the only pill for a certain type of children's kidney failure problems. Like, I mean, it's honestly, there's no way to, like, couch this as, here's this heroic company trying to make ends meet. As a matter of fact, it actually, the news caused biotech firms to tumble on the stock market because, you know, people are like reevaluating the ethics of gouging people that have no choice but to use your service. But,
right.
You know, like I've been saying, yeah, okay, have a reasonable amount of protection on a pill, you know, 15 years, 20 years maybe, and then have it go, it's effectively open source, you know, who can ever can make it can make it.
Yeah, I mean,
we had legislation that was intended to block people from going up to Canada to get some pills that are sold in Canada for at 1/18th the cost of what they're sold in America. And so, you know, and I can't remember if it passed or not, but, you know, it comes up occasionally from time to time. The other thing in my world that came up, we've talked about net neutrality a bunch and how, you know, I am for net neutrality. Well, Comcast is trying to take the route that because their corporations are people, their free speech is being squelched by them not being able to control all free speech on the internet.
What was that?
So, okay, so talking about the net neutrality thing.
Net neutrality.
Now, you know, if we don't keep net neutrality, what ends up happening is you have two different internets. You've got where people could be completely gouged by their ISP, and there's no recourse because only a handful of companies control the actual access to the internet in the country. You don't actually have any consumer choice to get on the internet in your area. Chances are, like in my area, I have exactly one option to hop on the internet. Most people in larger cities have two or three. But a good portion of the country has only one way to get on the internet. And if net neutrality is shot down, then what can happen is, right now, everybody's data has to be carried like anybody else's data. This data, it travels from point A to point B. You don't get to make stipulations on it. Well, if net neutrality is shot down, Comcast, those guys can say, hey, this data is going out to Netflix, so that should cost more. This data is going out to email servers. Clearly, you're a business user, so that should cost more. You know, they can prioritize bandwidth, prioritize connections, and they have you absolutely over a barrel because there is no. They've also got the law on their side to prevent any other ISPs from coming into their areas that they control. If you want to find out just how powerful they are, just try to set up a free free city Wi-Fi in your town. You'll have lawyers up your wazoo so fast you won't even. Hold on.
All right.
Try not to get you over. So anyway, the most recent filing from Comcast is that they're a corporation and therefore a person, and it violates their free speech that they can't charge you for your connection to the internet based on what you're doing on the internet.
That's really weird.
That's a
very bizarre way of going at it.
Well, they're trying the Hobby Lobby tactic.
Yeah. They're really trying to go through the looking glass on that comparison there. The Pope's in town. It was very nice of him to acknowledge Jews today.
He also heard he ate lunch with you today.
What was that?
I heard he ate lunch with you today.
Yes, that's very funny. You're a jerk.
Yes. He came to your cardboard box, offered you soup.
Yes. Jews pass during the day on Yom Kippur. I am very ill, so I had to cut my fast short. I only did a 12-hour fast, so I could take some medicine and hopefully recover enough, because I do have an armed duty shift tonight, so I have to highly medicated.
I was making the joke, the pontiff went to eat with homeless people after addressing Congress. That was the joke, not the you're fasting joke.
Oh. Well, why would you say that right as I was talking about him acknowledging Yom Kippur?
No. I was leading in. I thought you had seen the thing where he ate with homeless people. So stomping on each other's jokes. You're off your game today. You got a lack of sugar.
You're off your game. I was talking about the Pope and Jews, and you start talking about homeless people.
No, anyway, roll with it.
All right. So, the Pope's here. The traffic is actually wonderful today because they scared everybody into not driving. So traffic is actually wonderful.
Hey, cool, I'll take it. Usually every time the president goes anywhere near my town, which is dangerously within driving distance of where he's been a couple of times, it smells the crap out of my commute. I got home at 8 o'clock, left work at 5, got home at 8 o'clock. It's like, oh, good 3-hour commute. Thank you, President. Which kind of that led me into, I don't know if you saw the text I sent you, but I said, okay, if Donald Trump became president, how would he handle a papal visit?
I don't think the Pope would be able to leave Washington without shaking, if not signing, on Trump Tower's Vatican.
Trump Calisvetti, I like it, yeah. Now, I was thinking Trump would go the angle of, can I borrow the hat? I got kind of a hair thing going here.
Yes, I think also he would talk the Pope into endorsing a Vatican-themed casino in Las Vegas.
I was going to suggest that Pope, who is no, I mean, sorry, I got flipped it backwards. You know, the Vatican is gaudy and ostentatious. There's gold everywhere. So I figured that Trump was going to suggest that even the Vatican tone it down a bit.
That is actually a good point. That Trump
we're talking about a man that has a solid gold toilet here.
Yeah, the Vatican is one of the craziest, richest places on the planet. Rich with minerals, and it's they've never cracked the soil once for mining.
Yep.
What a dark history there.
Actually, it's fascinating if you look back through the history of several times where there was multiple popes, or the Pope had multiple wives. That was another fun one.
The one Pope that... There was one Pope that out-Caligula'd Caligula.
And that's saying something.
Yeah. It's a good tradition there.
The current Pope, Pope Francis, where, you know, he's, the Catholic Church did a smart thing having him, come in because, Ratzinger, the more you read about his history, the more terrifying it is. You know, it's like, okay, he was a Nazi youth. Well, you know, he was an impressionable child, had no idea what he was doing, maybe. Oh, but then, you know, he wrote the edict that protected, the priests that are being investigated for child abuse, and you know, personally sent some away to protect them from legal proceedings. It's like, okay, yeah, no, this guy not a good guy. So yeah, the new guy, not wearing $500 shoes, actually hanging out with poor folks. He's doing a couple of decent things, but. History will tell us whether or not.
Yeah. Well, my aggravation with him is just sort of pointing and grunting at various countries, going, "Hey, take in immigrants, take in immigrants, take in immigrants," and then us telling us, "Take in specifically Spanish-speaking immigrants," because that's who I stand with. I stand with Latin immigrants. They're like, "Okay, well, that's discriminatory against." The other, 75% of the planet that would like to come here, because 75% of the planet doesn't speak Spanish, okay? You know, like, you're just saying, hey, your neighbors, let your neighbors in, that's it. And it's like, no, there's people from Africa and the Middle East and China and Southeast Asia that are trying to come here, and we're saying, hey, we stand up for immigrants, Soy America, we stand for immigrants. It's like, Spanish-speaking doesn't mean immigrant. You're discriminating against the rest of the potential immigrants.
Right, well, and in my industry, we have, I mean, some of the foundational members of my the industry are from China. They're from Japan. They're from, Flippin' Khan's,
India?
Yes, which I never want to say India and or Pakistan because those two groups don't always like to be conflated, but...
The India's big on, technological industry, and Pakistan invented hacking. There's precedent to those words.
But there are a lot of tech folks in those areas, and you know, I work with them on a day in, day out basis, and so you know, you either go one of two routes. You either become a raging racist, or you start to like individually see them as people, and you know, understand what they're going through. And I would like to think that I'm the latter category. To that end, did I talk about the movie Outsourced? It's you know, kind of a romantic comedy, I don't know how to describe it, but it's, you know, it's a classic kind of romantic comedy style movie, but it also was a pretty good look at, hey, here's what the folks that you're talking to in India that, you know, so many people, you know, get frustrated and, like, rail against all these Indian...
This call is now being recorded.
All right, I have to stitch these together. I was talking about the movie. All right, so there's a spoiler for the movie, so if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, skip ahead 10 seconds. But in the movie, the call center that you start to identify with, you're rooting for them, they get replaced by a Chinese call center. And that's honestly the way this thing works in my industry. The Indian call centers have gotten good and efficient, and you know, they're good at what they do. And then somebody underbids them, and we're right back where we were, where you're getting people who have a terrible grasp of the English language, and or the culture, not understanding the stuff, and it's frustrating in my business, because there's a group that I had to work with, and I got to know, you know, I knew right where they were. They're just outside of Calcutta. You know, they would tell me the events that were happening in the areas where setting up the accounts and things that I had to deal with them about. And it's like, you know, I started identifying them, and so then, you know, you start talking about soccer, World Cup, and all that, and it's like, hey, this is what people need to do. You know, if we focus every second on here, let's get the call solved, let's get the problem knocked out, you know, people don't have that. It's called the observer effect, where if and astronauts feel this, people that travel a lot feel this, that, you know, the more you travel, the higher you are looking down on the world, the better your perspective is, where you realize that, you know, everybody is people, and people are just trying to exist, and, you know, everybody, for the most part, tries to be a decent person. And so, I know it's a long-winded rant, but, hey, people is people, and, yeah, call centers are call centers. Yep. But you know, it ties back to, you know, when people come to America, you know, they're bringing skills, they're bringing talents, they're bringing a perspective, if nothing else. And if we, you know, I'm a huge fan of Mexican food, but if everybody who comes in, if the only immigrants that come in is Spanish, then think about all the other wonderful cultural exchanges we'd miss out on.
Right. I don't have any problem with immigration. My problem with the apparently the Pope's view of immigration is that, you know, we need to be speaking Spanish here so that we can make, you know, one small amount of the potential immigrants to our country feel comfortable. We should be speaking Spanish instead of helping them speak English so that they can be on the same page as everyone else in the country, not to mention the people who come here from India and the Philippines and China already speaking English, already having a foot up on them. You know, when you see people willfully stamping their foot to disenfranchise themselves from conversations and friendships and relationships and networking that would be able to help them, and they're disenfranchising themselves with gritted teeth and stomping their foot saying, I have a right to disenfranchise myself. I will never speak English. You must speak Spanish. And they grit their teeth and they, you know, they clench their fist and they stamp their foot and say, I will disenfranchise myself until I die. And then you have people who, you know, encourage that. Unlike President Obama, who said people who come here should learn English because it's beneficial to them. You know, I'm quoting President Obama when I say people should be taught English. And yet we have people like the Pope who, you know, does his mass in Spanish as a protest. It's like, all right, that's one of those things. That's why the president talked about language being important, English being something, you know, the illegal immigrants would need to learn before becoming legalized. I don't know why all that talk went away before the big amnesty push, but that was something he used to say.
Well, it's interesting. You've got there are groups. There's all kinds of groups that actively try to sequester themselves. There's a guy in the, I'm trying to remember which group he was in, but in New York there, he was 30 years old in the Orthodox Jewish group there before he had spoken any English. He'd never heard or spoken English in America. And, it's another one, I'm blanking on the other group, but there was another, equally sequestered group, and it just, if you've got a big group, you can, the Amish, Pennsylvania Dutch, there's a couple of those groups where they speak absolutely no English until the kids are much older.
Yeah, that's, those are the, rare situations when it's the biggest situation, though, that you're going to find people coming here and not speaking English is, of course, the Spanish-speaking population, because they have, they have plenty of college opportunities to immerse themselves in Spanish, and that's fine. That's good, especially if you're wanting to go back to a Spanish-speaking country, or you're wanting to learn the language so you can go visit. It's awesome to have all those opportunities for immersion available. But for a lot of the communities here, it's used as a way to continue not learning English, which is this is one of those things. You mentioned a few examples of very, very, very high-end religious study and sequestration, like the Amish and the ultra-Orthodox Jews. This is not that. This is literally just, hey, everyone I know speaks Spanish. When I come home, we watch Spanish on the TV. And when I go to school, my teachers are forced to talk to me in Spanish as well. So I just do not need to learn English.
It always happens. My wife works in the school system, and she's got kids where they go to school. They are picking up all kinds of English at school. And they have, so they speak Spanish at home, they speak English at school, and what usually happens is within a couple of generations, no matter what group they're from, eventually their kids are going to speak almost none of their native tongue. And it's kind of interesting because the people we see going like to ISIS often are the children of immigrants. The immigrants are like, hey, I'm going to go to, England and make a better life for myself. But the children of the immigrants often have kind of a blowback effect, or the pendulum swings the other way. swings back. And so it's fascinating to me because I know some Spanish families. They're frustrated because their kids don't speak any Spanish, or they don't speak much Spanish. And so then they'll go visit the grandparents, or they'll have family come visit. And, you know, there's a separate division in the family where they can't even communicate with each other. So I would encourage, being bilingual, multilingual, you much more than I speak English and bad English. You speak, English and Farsi, and I can read some Spanish, but, you know, having dual languages, never is going to hurt you. There's no reason to not gain a second language. And in America, hey, grab English as your second language.
Right. Well, and that's one of those things. I agree with that. I think there is always good reason to know other languages. Especially in that situation where you said people can't. I've had situations where a mother is yelling at me in Spanish, and the daughter turns to the mother, chastises her in Spanish, then turns to me and says, "Don't worry, she's crazy. You know, it's fine." You know, and the daughter or granddaughter is speaking Spanish and English, and it's like, "Oh, she's crazy. You know, this, don't worry about it." You know, and diffusing some weird situation for me, while patrolling or something. And I like those situations because it definitely shows that evolution of cultures. Now, the thought of that same girl not knowing any Spanish, I think, is equally as heartbreaking, just because that's what her family speaks, you know. So if she didn't know that, she would just be a jerk. One of the things I wanted to touch on was something you said in the middle there, was native tongue. Which bothers me a healthy bit, just because nobody is speaking, especially from the Central American areas, no one is speaking their native tongue. No one's speaking Quetzalcoatl or Aztec or Mayan or anything like that. It's all Spanish, and for anyone to act like, yes, this is our native language, we are natives, therefore you're trying to take away our native heritage. And it's like, that's infuriating, because it's like, your native heritage was already taken over. You know, you already let that be ripped away when you didn't look into it, and you just retroactively decided that Spanish was your native language.
Yeah, well, and you and I would be speaking most likely Gaelic or maybe our genes are all over the place. But, you know, a good portion of it would be Gaelic ancestry there. You know, it's like, but somewhere in the past, our family, they blended in. They went with the lingua franca of the town there, the place they're in.
These kids see me backing up, so they run behind my car. Because that's the thing to do. That's where you belong. When the car is backing up, you run behind it.
Does your car have a backup camera?
No, it doesn't. No backup camera. So.
All right. I got to pitch a book to you. I made a commitment. I've read a lot of nonfiction over the past couple of years, and I realized it was probably making me, a one-dimensional bore at parties. So I made a concerted effort to read more fiction. And the second book I chose was The Martian by Andy Weir. Holy crap, that's a fantastic book.
Yeah, that's the one that's being made into a movie, right?
Yeah, it's got Matt Damon as as the lead, and I mean, honestly, the book is hilarious. There'll be literal laugh and cry moments.
Yeah, right.
Totally worth looking at. And right now, because it's coming out as a movie, at your local grocery store, they probably have a dirt cheap paperback. I got mine for $4.50. So tons of fun reading, very, very in-depth. The guy from XKCD described it as, hey, remember that part in Apollo where they had to figure out how to keep everybody from dying with just this stuff on the table? Imagine if there was a whole 400-page book of that. That's what it is. But it's riveting, it's entertaining, and it's got its hilarious moments. So I'm looking forward to the movie. I don't think they can screw up the book too much, but I'm sure they will.
Yeah, I gotta say I'm a pretty big Salman Rushdie fan, and I finished Satanic Verses, and just before getting to see him plug in his new novel, and I just want to say Satanic Verses is probably one of the most imaginative, just crazy books I've ever read. It's an epic that just kind of dives between different stories and weaves them all together, and it's very Muslim-y while also somehow being offensive to all Muslims. It made it clear that it was the kind of book that you would never fully understand if you weren't somehow versed in that culture. Just one second. All right. So the name of his new book is 2 years, 8 months, and 28 nights. 2 years, 8 months, and 28 nights. And it sounds like it's going to cover some of the topics that were addressed in Satanic Verses. But he made it very clear in his speech that he was going to try to be very pre-Islamic in his way of looking at it. So, hey there.
Interestingly, Yusuf Islam, what's his name? The one singer that changed his name to Yusuf Islam. Vowed to kill Salman Rushdie, and it's kind of good that so far the two of them haven't been in a room together.
Yeah, it is one of those hilarious Yusuf Islam, otherwise known as Cat Stevens.
Cat Stevens, that's
converted. Yes, converted to Islam, and he converted all the way. Converted to the craziest version of Islam. The version of Islam that declares death to artists. So, yeah. And I don't know if you've ever listened to or talked to or met Salman Rushdie, but he is... Or watched an interview with him.
I've seen a couple interviews. Authors at Google Talk was really fun.
Yeah, he's I mean, he's a nice guy. He really is. And it's really hard to imagine anyone just looking at him and going like, yes, kill him! Kill him!
Well, the whole title, Satanic Verses, comes from the concept that the Quran was dictated to Muhammad, and then people have challenged and said, hey, how come there's a couple of things that contradict each other? And the stance is that, well, those are the verses where Satan snuck in and was dictating. And so, that's even to understand the title of the book, you have to have some knowledge of Islam.
Yeah.
Well, he explains that in the narration of the story, with the various stories that are intertwined, and makes direct reference to it, and even acts out that storyline. And I think that's he's clearly a skeptic. He's a skeptic skeptic. He's somebody who can put it in perspective, and he referred to the prophet as the businessman. But so yeah, that was I could see why people would be upset, but as many times as I've had my religious views lampooned, I couldn't imagine an organized call for the death of someone.
Actually, as many times as you've had your religious views lampooned by your brother.
Exactly.
I mean, let's be honest here. You take no less abuse from me than anybody else.
Right, right. I do think it's so funny whenever I read stuff that's like, what Jews actually believe, and it's something about the Talmud, and it has some verse from, or some excerpt from the Talmud, and they have that as if it's like, yes, all Jews believe this, and it's like, nah, you've completely misunderstood. You completely misunderstood the point of the Talmud, Talmud's not the Bible. That's why it's called the Talmud. It's basically the ongoing discussion of a living religion. And, also, I'd like to point out that there's no, like, legislation passed by people going, well, citing this verse in the Talmud, that's why we're going to pass this legislation. No, it's not, that's not. There is a healthy amount of separation of religion in Judaism, separation of religion and governmental procedures.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to some other religions, which shall remain nameless, that dictate every element of a governmental body. But I guess.
What were you going to say? Sorry, sorry to interrupt you. All right. Well, I've had a good talk with you. I think we ought to wrap it up.
All right. You have a good day.
Let's tell the subscribers to email the podcast. That's with an E at gmail.com. It's amazing. This time we've agreed with each other more. Usually you and I just call each other up to disagree with each other. So questions or comments, email the podcast with an E, they're podcaste at gmail.com, or go to thepodcast.com, and if you have a WordPress account, you can comment there. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is Tech signing off.
This is Gun signing off.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Silly.